This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 weeks ago, Governor Ed Rendell signed laws to authorize 61,000 slot machines in the state of Pennsylvania, more than any other state outside of Nevada. Pennsylvania is only the latest to jump aboard this bandwagon. In fact, there's something of a race underway in the Mid-Atlantic region, with slots already in New Jersey, Delaware, and West Virginia, coming now in Pennsylvania, and under consideration in Maryland and the District of Columbia. Of course, there are slots on riverboats up and down the Mississippi. Other states have them, too. Both Texas and Oregon are thinking about it. Proponents say slots are an easy way to pick up much-needed tax revenue to fund schools, highways, provide new jobs. In Pennsylvania, income from slot machines is slated to reduce property taxes by about 20%. Some critics object on moral grounds. Others argue economics. They say that what makes sense in Las Vegas could be counterproductive in Philadelphia. Later in the program, another technological marvel, the iPod. But first, the spread of slots. If you have slots in your state, have they helped or hurt? Can you tell us where you've seen the benefits and where you've seen the harm? If slots are under consideration, what are you hearing by way of argument? Who's behind each side? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Bill Thompson, professor of public administration at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, author of Gambling in America, an encyclopedia of history, issues, and society. He's with us by phone from South Korea. Welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Glad we can make a connection.
What are you doing in Korea?
I'm looking at casinos. Yesterday, I visited 8 casinos on Jeju Island. It's a resort island in off the southern coast of Korea. But here, they do not let Koreans gamble in their own casinos.
So these are all foreigners?
The guests in the casinos are all foreigners, and the casinos are not doing too well because most of the people here are Koreans.
Well, let's get back to domestic gambling.
Sure.
Before Pennsylvania made its decision, you were commissioned by the governor's office there to estimate the volume of state revenues that could
certainly
be generated by slot machines. What did you find?
Well, I found that an average expected take for a slot machine would be somewhat over $90,000 each. The machines in Atlantic City, I think, make $92,000 or $3,000. The machines in Connecticut do even better. They make over $150,000 a year. So I looked at my report using a figure that I thought was reasonable in the 90,000 area. That's $90,000 a year. Each machine takes away from the players. The players lose that money. That's after all the prizes have been given out, all the jackpots have been given out. The players still lose over $90,000 per machine. And from that, I estimated that Pennsylvania, with over 30,000 machines, would make revenues over $3 billion taxed at one-third. Pennsylvania budget would realize a $1 billion return.
And a report that the governor's office apparently liked so much, they've doubled the number of machines.
They doubled it. I think they took my report and said, yes, right on, and let's have 60,000 machines instead of 30. I was not saying the machines were good for the Pennsylvania economy. I was just saying the machines will make this kind of money.
Well, that's
and they do.
And that's the next question. At the same time, you were commissioned by a citizens group in Pennsylvania to look at the impact of slot machines on the local economy. What did you find there?
Well, I asked some very simple questions that I never hear politicians asking. I asked, where does the money come from and where does the money go? And I found, with using reasonable data from around the country and looking at the demographics of the situation, that approximately 100% of the money will come out of the local Philadelphia region or a local region within the state. But the 100% of the money that is taken out of local pockets does not stay in the local economy. It's divided in many ways, and approximately half of that money will leave the economy, meaning if a machine wins $100,000 a year, for each machine, you're going to see about $50,000 leaving the local economy. The money leaves the economy in several ways. First of all, The machines cost money. Each machine costs about $15,000, and guess what? They're not made in Pennsylvania. Ironically, they're made in Nevada. So Pennsylvania has slot machines. They're going to send a lot of money to Nevada, $15,000 per machine. Then there's other expenses, the labor expenses. But unfortunately, slot machines don't hire a lot of people. One person can be hired for maybe every 30 machines, so it's not labor intensive. But the labor money will stay. But then the taxation money leaves in several different ways. First of all, it runs off to Harrisburg, and then it's divided into property tax relief that's statewide. So Philadelphia probably loses half of the 34% in tax money. And then there's the profits from the machine. And we found in Pennsylvania the machines were going to go to racetracks. Now, they've designated some other locations, but the racetracks, for the most part, were owned by out-of-state firms. So I assume that about half of the profits will be leaving the state, which means that you have $100,000 in Philadelphia one day, you put a slot machine in, and then you send $50,000 out of the Philadelphia economy, and where you had $100,000 the day before, now you only have $50,000. And then you multiply that by every machine that you put in the area, and maybe there'll be 20,000 or so machines in the Philadelphia area out of the 60,000. Mm-hmm. And it's a loser economically. More money leaves than comes in. And I'll tell you what, this is before you consider social costs. This is before you consider the costs of compulsive gambling. And these are real costs. And when you put machines in a community, the amount of compulsive gambling inevitably goes up, as far as a matter of fact, the National Gambling Impact Study Commission said, when you put casino-style gambling into a community, the compulsive gambling rate doubles, which means it goes from approximately 1% of the adult population to 2% of the adult population. Which means if you have 10 million people in a region or local economy, you just increase gambling from compulsive gambling from 100,000 people to 200,000, and this costs.
Let me ask you about one of the imperatives behind this sort of race that's underway in Pennsylvania's area.
Sure.
Every other state around Pennsylvania has slot machines and gambling. People in Pennsylvania say, why should our people in Pennsylvania go to New Jersey or Delaware or West Virginia to gamble there? We can keep that money right here.
Well, there's a premise that the people are going to come home, that they're going to stop going to Atlantic City in order to gamble in a slot machine barn in Philadelphia, or in a slot machine area of a race course, stands or something. That premise has not come to fruition over years. When Detroit legalized casinos, it was because people went to Windsor to gamble.
In Canada.
In Canada, just across the Detroit River. Ambassador Bridge. Guess what? They still go to Canada. As a matter of fact, after Detroit legalized, Canada doubled its casino capacity in Windsor, and now Detroit has three casinos, and each of the three is doing very, very well. You're going to have more people gambling than ever gambled before, and Atlantic City's not going to be put to ruin because you have slot machines in Philadelphia. The people won't be coming home. You just have a lot more gambling.
Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Bill Thompson, who's a professor and gambling expert at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He's on the line with us from Korea. Aaron is on the line with us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Good afternoon, Professor Thompson. I'm a fan of your work.
Thank you.
I live pretty much about three blocks from the Pimlico Racetrack, which is
okay.
The home of the Preakness.
Right.
And the governor of the state of Maryland, in his wisdom, has seen fit to designate that as a site for what amounts to one of the largest casinos in the eastern United States.
Sure.
And I got involved because I didn't think this was a good thing for my neighborhood.
Right.
And as I began to talk to my state legislators about this, what I found was that the amount of money being spent by the horse racetrack owners and by out-of-state casino companies who see the expansion opportunity,
Yes.
The number of dollars is just mind-boggling, not just on lobbying, which, you know, is millions of dollars a year, but also in campaign contributions.
Right. They're not going to be satisfied just to lobby people. They want to make sure they get their people elected.
Absolutely. So it's very difficult for common sense to prevail and for the will of the people to be heard over the din of so much money being spent.
Yeah.
Aaron, let me ask you, Pimlico, as you know, has fallen on hard times, as horse racing has in many parts of the country, but particularly there in Maryland. They say that they're not going to be able to keep a profit going unless they have slot machines. You've also heard the state legislature say, we can't afford to subsidize the horse racing industry anymore. So, Aaron, what if Pimlico goes under?
Well, yeah, I think that's an interesting question. My personal opinion, and I'd love to hear Professor Thompson's view on this, but my personal opinion is that Pimlico has been managed to look terrible because they have been coming to the state for slots for year after year after year.
If that's what they're trying to do, it's worked. I was there not too long ago.
I view it as a lobbying tactic. Now, you know, clearly that industry has fallen on hard times, but so have, you know, the Maryland steel industry is pretty much gone.
Sure.
We did nothing about that. The big box hardware stores have pretty much destroyed the mom-and-pop hardware industry.
Yeah, well, I always say, Walmart's really been kicking Kmart's tail. God, look at all those people going to lose jobs at Kmart. Now they got the whole Martha thing on top of them. Poor Kmart's going to go under. We've got to save Kmart. Let's let them have slot machines.
Not
the free enterprise way.
The horse racing industry really has done nothing to deserve such a massive...
The horse race thing began. They said, we need horses for the national defense. This whole thing about we need horse tracks, they help the breeding farms, is based on a premise that the Army uses horses. And that started over 150 years ago, but it just isn't true anymore.
Aaron, thanks very much for the phone call.
Appreciate you putting the show on. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email that we've gotten from J.D. Boydston in Longview, Texas. The addition of casino gambling has been a very positive thing, he writes. The downtown riverfront area had been in decay before the casinos came in. Today, Shreveport riverfront area has been rejuvenated and continues to improve. Most of the revenue comes from Texans who cross the state line to gamble. The entire metropolitan area of Shreveport, Bossier City has benefited from legalized gambling.
Okay. I think the person makes a point, and I'd like to make the point. Las Vegas economy, this is not dealing with social costs and social problems, but the Las Vegas economy has benefited tremendously from gaming. We're the fastest growing city in America, the fastest growing economy. We got a lot of money. It works. The writer also identifies the reason. Because the gambling money comes from outside. Shreveport just happens to be located up in a corner of a state where the metropolitan areas are Little Rock, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and especially Dallas-Fort Worth. So the money comes in from over 100 miles away. It's not the local people in Shreveport that are gambling. So, indeed, it benefits the Shreveport economy. This will absolutely not be the situation in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh because the machines will be played by local residents that can take a five-minute bus ride, automobile ride, whatever, and be at the slot machine.
Our guest is Bill Thompson, professor of public administration at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He's the author of Gambling in America, an encyclopedia of history, issues, and society. We'll take more of your calls and emails after a short break. 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the impact of slot machines. If you have slots in your state or live in a place where they're being considered, give us a call. You're invited to join the discussion. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. We're speaking with Bill Thompson, a professor of public administration at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, an expert on gambling. And joining us now from a state where slot machines were approved by legislators over 10 years ago is Rusty Morgan. He's county commissioner for Jefferson County in West Virginia. He's with us by phone from his home in Ripon. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon.
Legislators approved slots in West Virginia's four racetracks in 1994. Law required that counties put it to a referendum. That same year, voters approved slots everywhere except your county. How come?
The county is quite small at that time, probably around 30,000 people. Still rural, and it was probably just too much of a leap in dealing with the moral and the social issues.
Mm-hmm. They did go ahead and approve it 2 years later. What made it become more appealing?
Actually, that was touched on earlier in your program. Huge resources were brought to bear in a very small community. Awful lot of money was spent, and a terrific campaign was waged, and it pretty much overwhelmed the voters and schmoozed them enough to tip the balance.
And how have things worked out since then?
Quite honestly, I worked against approving the slot machines. But looking back at our experience, it's been very good. It's been a good relationship. It's provided tremendous income for a very small community. We are a rapidly growing community, and we have had a long history with horse racing. There have been two horse race tracks in the county, and part of the arrangement that we have is that the racetrack and racing would be retained. And this has become immensely important in our community and preserving green space and attracting breeders and horsemen to our community.
And how is the tax revenue being used?
Tax revenue, the county commission has, for the most part, saved that money up to the present time. About $700,000 a year goes to paying for ambulance service, which, of course, holds taxes down. We use about, I'd say, $100,000 for charitable donations from the county to various organizations. And I will add also that the racetrack has been very generous in granting money to local charities and organizations.
Have you looked at, as Bill Thompson's been talking about, the overall economic benefit and at the social costs?
Well, the social cost is certainly there. The casino has done a good job of hiding it from the community, and the truth is the local people, I don't know anyone that goes over there, but it runs practically around the clock. There's I think 3,500 machines, perhaps more. I'm not quite sure of the number over there. Tremendous amount of money changes hands. We benefit in the county itself about, I'd say, roughly $5 million, $3 million to the county and roughly a couple million to the municipalities is the way it's divided up. So that's a lot of money in a small community that's very desperate for capital to deal with the problems of growth in the community.
Now, what's going to be the impact? Do you know how many of those people come from Pennsylvania, and what will be the impact if Pennsylvania gets slots or
Renegade slots? Well, we're concerned about that. I think the wisdom on the street is that it may flatten out here our take to the county. But chances are this has all been anticipated, and I think Penn National is pretty wily. I'm sure they'll compete.
Okay. Rusty Morgan, thanks very much.
You bet.
Rusty Morgan, County Commissioner for Jefferson County in West Virginia, joined us by phone from his home in Ripon. Let's get another caller on the line, and we'll go to Marlon, who's with us from Des Moines, Iowa.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question for Dr. Thompson. Last year, the city of Des Moines voted in a new mayor who ran on the platform that he would not even consider bringing in any gambling slots into the city.
Okay.
And shortly after he was elected, even though we don't have in the city, the tone not only of the mayor, but it seemed like of the entire city council was somewhat more conciliatory towards adding them. And my question is this, for those of us who are concerned about not having gambling tied to the economic welfare of our municipality, What other alternatives, viable alternatives, can we encourage our city councilmen to look at? The city of Des Moines has been struggling with budget problems for quite some time. What other alternatives are there other than gambling?
Well, we have to look at gambling as a tax and look at who is paying the tax and then consider other taxes. And is this the most equitable, efficient, and fair way to raise tax money? Consider where the money comes from. Money is coming out of people's pockets. Who are the people going to slot machine casinos? They're not the people flying to Las Vegas and spending four nights in our hotels and then flying home after they've spent an average of $600 on their visit.
Yet,
local residents, and they're likely to be poorer people.
Yet, Marlon raises a good point. There is a political cost to saying, let's raise the income tax. There is very little political cost to say, let's authorize gambling.
Especially when there's low political cost and you're going to get campaign contributions forever for the next election, and you have a lobby group, and then you have opponents that don't have money, and what you have is a political formula where you'll have a vote. If it's voted no, you have a vote the next year. If it's voted no, you have a vote the next year. As soon as it's voted yes, you stop having votes. That's the political formula. If we had a sunset provision that every two or three years we were going to have a vote, do we keep it? The formula might change, but it's not that way. Governments need revenues. Look at every source. Should government sell tobacco? Some governments sell liquor. Is this the way to raise money for governments? I suggest it's probably not. Let's go back and look at the general tax situation. But the best thing for raising money for governments is to promote a strong economy. And if a government, instead of promoting a strong economy, introduces slot machine gaming, which takes money out of the community, it leads to people not having jobs because people are not spending money in retail and other areas. That ultimately reduces revenues for communities.
Marlon, where you live in Des Moines, do you think people would vote to approve higher taxes as opposed to gambling?
Well, I can only speak for myself, and I would probably say I'd be open to that because as I listen to Dr. Thompson, you know, he raised a point that I hadn't considered, and I'm sure that many others, and that is that gambling is a tax. I think, you know, it comes down to linguistics on the part of a lot of our city leaders. So I think, you know, if the argument can be made, I think quite persuasively, as Dr. Thompson has just made it, that gambling is in fact a tax, that it robs your economic base. It does not really, it may add to it, but oftentimes, I think your previous caller brought this up, who lives out in West Virginia, and that is that the economic cost of gambling is somewhat hidden, it seems like, or it's just...
Well, he did say that it was an overall benefit in West Virginia.
Well, so. He said the social costs were hidden, but with West Virginia, the players are coming from outside. They're not the West Virginia people. They're coming from Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and they're driving onto the tracks in West Virginia. So it's like Las Vegas. The gamblers are outside. If this happens, it can be good for your economy. But this doesn't happen in Philadelphia and not in Des Moines, where the gamblers are local people.
Marlon, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this will be John, who's with us from Minneapolis.
Greetings. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. In Minnesota, we've been trying to get a pass where the state would run casinos.
Yes.
And right now, they're all on reservations.
Yes.
The main argument against the expansion is not to expand gambling, but in the last 10 years, slot machines have doubled on reservations.
Yes.
And my question would be, in a situation like this, there's a lot of money being contributed to both parties.
Yes.
Why shouldn't the state have a state-run casino?
Have a state-run casino?
Yes.
Well, you know, the state governments run lotteries.
Okay.
And it's really, I find it ironic and I find it absurd that the state governments don't even debate lotteries. They just assume this is a service that the government should provide to people. And at the same time, we're having debates over health care, and I'm not going to pick a partisan side because both sides are arguing. Should the government provide health care? How much should the government provide? What kind of health care should the government provide? That's debated. But it's assumed that the government should provide gambling to people, and I think that's absurd. My goodness, we can't provide health care, and we're providing gambling?
There's also the point
to think of the role of the government. Is this the proper role of a government?
There's also the point to be made that New York State, when it ran a bookie industry, the off-track betting parlors, it was the first bookie in history to lose money.
Yeah, and Delaware tried to run sports betting, and they hired bureaucrats to set the line on games, and they just lost money. Now, you have a situation where you have Indian reservations. Now, more and more states are going to the tribes and saying, we want a share of the revenue, and the tribes are giving a share of the revenue as if it were a tax.
If I could make one quick comment.
Sure, go ahead, John.
And that is that I don't believe that the job of government is to provide the health insurance for everyone either.
Okay.
I think that's debatable. But nobody's debating the gambling side. I think let's debate the gambling side. Is this the role of a government?
All right. Thank you for being there.
Okay. John, thanks very much.
Yep.
Joining us now to talk about the remaking of the chrome, shiny, lights-flashing, sound-packed slot machine is Gary Rivlin. He's a reporter for the New York Times, and he joins us by phone from his office in San Francisco. Good of you to be with us today.
Hi, Neil.
One-armed bandits traditionally enjoyed low status in the world of gambling. You say that's changing.
Yeah, if people haven't seen a slot machine lately, they're in for a big surprise. It's no longer just the spinning reels that go click, click, click into place. They have video monitors. They have hundreds of sounds. They pay sometimes multi-million dollar jackpots. I mean, the entire slot machine has been remade by computer chips and by some really clever people, and they're very much more powerful than they had been.
Who makes these machines? Earlier, Bill Thompson says they're mostly made in the state of Nevada.
Right. The biggest maker by far, the Microsoft, if you will, of the slot machine business is IGT. And they're up in Reno, and they make about 70% of the machines. And let's put it this way, if you had invested in IGT in 2000 versus, let's say, Microsoft, Your investment, your $10,000 would be worth $75,000 now versus the $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 in Microsoft. So they've done rather well. And then there's a bunch of smaller players as well. Bally is a well-known name.
Pretty good payout. Now, explain to us, how have they made these, beyond the computer chip, but what's the effect in terms of the consumer? How is it more appealing or addictive?
Well, I talked to a bunch of psychologists for an article I wrote, psychiatrists too, and they just marvel at how brilliant the slot machine is. There's this really powerful principle within psychology, intermittent reward. The parent who always gives love, well, the child isn't feeling very needy. The parent that never gives love, well, the child after a while is not even going to bother. But the parent who's inconsistent and sometimes gives love and sometimes gives something else, that child's always going to want to go back and go back and go back. And that's a slot machine. The slot machine sometimes gives you a huge payout or a nice payout, but often it just gives you nothing. And there's just something powerful about that gets, a certain percentage of the population playing and playing and playing. And there's all sorts of tricks. My personal favorite is called the near miss. Industry people call it the near miss. And, you line up two cherries, but you get a lemon for the third spot. You go, oh, I came so close. And you figure you're doing well, and if you just play again, you'll get close. But the truth is that's all. They've programmed the machines to have many, many, many near misses. So, you win or you lose, but what you're feeling is, ooh, I'm getting close next time.
We're talking about slot machines, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Gary Rivlin, one final question, and important to those of us in radio. Sound is a big consideration in the design of slot machines these days.
Yeah, it used to be in the old days that you'd have a few sounds, just kind of a single note playing, do-do-do-do-do. But now there's music, there's 400 or more sound events, they call it, in a slot machine, and if you're starting to win, the music gets faster. They're getting very, very clever, I guess critics would say diabolical, about how they're using sound in these machines, and it seems to be working. My favorite statistic is that slot machines in North America last year brought in $30 billion in revenues for casinos. If you add up all the revenues at McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, and throw in Starbucks for your coffee, it still doesn't match the amount of revenues that slot machines brought in last year. And it's just, they have proven so successful, and as the callers have been saying, it's just, people talk about the spread of casinos in the U.S., and largely what they really mean is the spread of slot parlors. And it's slot parlors, it's slot machines that have been driving the spread of casinos around the U.S. much more than any other gambling game.
Gary Rivlin, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Gary Rivlin, a reporter for The New York Times, with us by phone from his office in San Francisco. Bill Thompson is still with us. Let's see if we can get another caller in. Bruce joins us from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention you're talking about Kmart possibly having slot machines.
I think that was an improbable suggestion, but go ahead.
No, it's not, because they do have them in Nevada.
Well, everything has slot machines in Nevada.
we have them in stores, grocery stores and everything, but my suggestion was, why give it to a failed business? That's the logic of the racetracks. We're failing, therefore we deserve to have slot machines.
Well, my comment was... I'm not a moralist on this, and I don't believe you can legislate morality, but I think the social cost does have to be considered.
Yes, definitely. I think the costs are not morality when you have theft and people missing work and you have people not paying their debts. That's not morality. That's lost money for your economy.
That's right. And, for instance, my ex-wife, she lost custody of our kids to me. Because she couldn't keep the rent money in her pocket long enough to pay it.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that, Bruce.
And that comes to my main point.
If you could make it very quickly.
Sure, okay. If there's a way to calculate the direct damage somehow that is caused by people, problem gamblers, I would suggest that you double that and set that aside into a fund above and beyond whatever taxes that these corporations pay.
Sure.
And you can make it an escrow fund where they have to keep it in there for like 10 years, and if no claim is made on it, they can get it back or whatever.
Oh, interesting suggestion,
Bruce. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I have worked on calculating the social costs of gambling, meaning the thefts, the debts.
And if you could tell it to us in 15 seconds.
Right. It comes to about $10,000 per compulsive gambler. And if you put machines in a community, you're going to get an extra 1% of the adult population becoming compulsive gamblers. Find out, an extra 100,000 people compulsive gamblers.
Bill Thompson.
10,000, that's an extra $1 billion.
Bill Thompson, I'm afraid we're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us from Korea.